Hey, we're back on Downtown. It's 4:30. On your Wednesday afternoon, time for this week's edition of Sports Lit 101. Bruce Pratt here in studio with us to talk about the bad old days of Chicago.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking as I was driving up that when you talk about Chicago as the second city today, people think of Second City, the improv.
Mm.
But Chicago, for years, suffered from an inferiority complex that it was the second city. It was not New York. And one of the things that, people tried to do in post-Civil War Chicago, the elite, the being both the nouveau riche or the old rich families from the Midwest, was they wanted to create things that were extant in New York. And one of those things was Washington Park, where there was a great racehorse facility and later golf clubs, and it was where the elite would meet. But of course, for the elite to make money in racing, there needed to be betting. And whenever there is betting in horse racing, there is the legitimate gambling and the illegitimate gambling. But I wanted to just remind people of the words of the great George Plunkett, who was one of the fine Tammany Hall people from New York in the year that that Tammany Hall gracefully ran the New York City with corruption on a scale sometimes. It would be mind-boggling. But George Plunkett was served in both the houses of the legislature in New York State, and he worked for Tammany Hall. And he wrote a book called Practical Politics, and I'm just going to read you a little bit from it. Everyone is talking these days about Tammany men growing rich on graft, but nobody thinks of drawing a distinction between honest graft and dishonest graft. There's all the difference in the world between the two. Yes, many of our men have grown rich in politics. I have myself. I've made a fortune out of the game, and I'm getting richer every day, but I've not gone in for dishonest graft. Blackmailing gamblers, saloon keepers, disorderly people, and neither have the men who have made big fortunes. There's an honest graft, and I'm an example of how it works. I might sum up the whole thing by saying I seen my opportunities and took them. Let me explain. My party's in power in the city, and it's going to undertake a lot of public improvements. Well, I'm tipped off that they're going to lay out a new park at a certain place. I see my opportunity. I go to that place. I buy up all the land I can in the neighborhood. Then the board of this or that makes its plan public, and there's a rush to get my land, which nobody cared particularly for before. And ain't it perfectly honest to charge a good price and make a profit on my investment? Now, he said that with a straight face, and I have read the book. It's hysterically funny. But he believed that there were two kinds of graft, the honest graft and the dishonest graft. Well, let me tell you, Chicago had more kinds of graft than you can possibly imagine. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that Chicago was an immigrant city, even more so than New York. In the late 1800s, 28% of Chicago could trace itself to of German lineage. It was a home to more Poles than any city other than Warsaw in the world. It had one of the largest African-American communities in the Midwest and north of the Mason-Dixon line. And it had rich traditions of Bohemian and Italian and Ukrainian and other immigrant populations. And they tended to have their own graft. The Jews had their own graft. The Irish had their graft. The Italians had their graft, and it was only when occasionally they collided with one another that things happened. Well, racetrack gambling was America's first big sport, and there's no one can argue that. It was a multi-million dollar enterprise from the beginning, and as tracks proliferated after the Second World War, Chicago and New York were the big places, but there were tracks everywhere. And betting wasn't really controlled. There were two reasons for that. One, a lot of the betting, the high-stakes betting, was done by wealthy people, and people figured, well, if you got that much money and you're willing to pay off your bets, who gets hurt? It's a victimless crime, right? But of course, once people see there's money being made in the betting, then they start having all kinds of different betting. And in Chicago, the millions of dollars that were paid off by gamblers, primarily Irish gamblers, sometimes feuding with one another, bombing and blowing up each other's facilities later in the period. But this book, I should say, starts in 1837, ends in roughly in 1911, with the bulk of it the 1890s through 1910. When you think about that part of American history, that age of American history, we're talking about America coming into its own. It's coming out of the Civil War. It's coming into its industrial age. And the population of its big cities is absolutely exploding. And Chicago is a city that goes from 25,000 to 1.2 million in a matter of decades.
Wow.
And even after the Chicago fire, it rebuilt very quickly. And this book, the people who show up in this book range from General Philip Sheridan, World War II hero, to Wyatt Earp as a corrupt wrestling official.
Wow.
And this is not fiction, ladies and gentlemen. This is fact. Marshall Field, the famous department store magnate. John L. Sullivan, Gentleman Jim Corbett. The cast of characters in this book is phenomenal. Now, I will tell you that there is a tremendous amount of minutia. There are a lot of graphs pointing out how much money was made. But I think anyone would have to salute the creativity of the graft, the absolute creativity of the political. I mean, one gambler would bribe 10 constables to go raid somebody's and that gambler would have already arranged for 50 constables to raid somebody else's. And they had what were called police courts. Dragging to police court, you were seen in a gambling place placing a bet, you're going to be fined $1. So they bring the guy who's running the whole scheme in, and they fine him $250. And the guy says, okay, great. Here, he peels off $250 because he's just taken in $10,000 that day. The machinations where they move tracks outside of Chicago to the suburbs because the city is cracking down. Then Cook County track cracks down and they move to the northwestern Indiana because what they have in Chicago is fantastic public transportation. So you could get it was 25 cents round trip to ride out to the lake in near Hammond, Indiana, place your bets and stuff and come back home. It's also the place where parimutuel betting finally takes over pool betting. Now, for people who don't know how parimutuel betting works, the three horses pay off for win, place, and show, and they pay off based on the odds at the time the race begins. In pool betting, you would go to a bookie and you'd see that a horse was going off at 10 to 1, and you'd bet that money. Well, of course, that's easily manipulated, and suddenly right. That horse is now, everybody knows it's going to win, and it's a 2-to-1 favorite because the money's been laid the other way. The number of ways that they came up to get around the gambling crusades. Now, you've also got this odd alliance between the Republican reformers and their allies in the Women's Christian Temperance Union and their favored gamblers as opposed to the other gamblers. And they would start these police task force, and they would go out and they would make raids. They would do all this kind of work, and then everybody would be happy. And then 2 weeks later, everybody was right back in business. The amount of money that changed hands, it was saying there were some gamblers that were paying $20,000 a week for protection. $20,000 a week then is something like $1 million now. And they were making money. A lot of these guys lived in mansions and they were involved in horse breeding. You find out how the first wire services were used to corrupt everything. If you could get a wire operator to delay for 2 minutes,
right.
The result...
It's the sting.
Well, that's just where I was going. The sting is based on an actual event in Chicago.
Wow.
Where a gambler, Monty Tenz, was able to get the wire services to delay stuff, and they would bring in marks, and they give them they tell them, look, this horse is going to make a fortune, and they would get there, and they would place their bet, and then some reason, I'm sorry, we had the information, but you didn't get it down on time. Look, we'll put $5,000 down next time. By the time the guy made three bets, he's $15,000 in the hole. He's a rich guy who's in big trouble, and he can't go home and tell his wife exactly what happened because, after all, he's doing something that's illegal. There were a tremendous amount of money bet by women, and what they would do is they couldn't go into the pool halls So they would get runners to do it, and they were usually young African-American kids would come up to these fancy carriages, and these women with their bonnets and all their finery would pass them their little bill, and they'd go in and they'd get what they needed to do. Well, it's also the most egalitarian form of entertainment in our country at that time, because the racetracks catered to everybody. And the rich may have driven their carriages, and the other guys may have walked around. The rich may have been in the betting rings. The other guys may have been with the handbook operators. But it was only because poor people were losing money that the temperance people and all these other people could convince, and the preachers could convince people to shut it down. And on and off, it was shut down, but it never went away. The book is called Horse Racing the Chicago Way, Gambling, Politics, and Organized Crime, 1837-1911 by Stephen A. Reiss, R-I-E-S-S. It's from Syracuse Press. And the reason I didn't tell more of the stories in here is I don't want to blow them for anybody. It is so good. The characters are just the sheer audacity of the crime. You have to admire it.
That sounds great. I can't wait to read it.
It's really good. I think you'll like it.
Thank you, Bruce. It's 4:41. We'll take a break. When we come back, Bruce is here to talk with Maine Black Bear hockey coach Ben Barr next on Downtown.